And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Athletic Baseball Show for Friday, July 28th. Derek Van Riper here with Keith Law. It's the weekend leading into the 2023 trade deadline, but the moves have already started. So on this episode, we'll discuss the White Sox return from their decision to trade Lucas Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez to the Angels overnight into Thursday morning. We'll talk about a prospect getting the call in San Francisco as Marco Luciano joins the suddenly getting younger Giants club. We'll talk about his potential impact here in the short term. We didn't get a chance last week to talk much about Sal Frelick. We'll talk about what he's doing now that he's up with the Brewers. And we've got a few other notable changes from Keith's updated prospect list from last week that I felt we should discuss on the pod as well. So, Keith, we're going to begin today with the trade, the first big trade, really, of this deadline window. Lucas Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez are now members of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. They are not moving Shohei Ohtani. They are buyers, and they sent Edgar Caro and Kai Bush back, two of their top five prospects from the rankings that you published at The Athletic entering the season. So as far as the return for the White Sox go, trading away two guys that they were going to lose as free agents likely at the end of the season anyway, how did they do quality-wise with this return?
Fair. Just fair. I mean, it's, you know, Giolito, I thought, was one of the best rentals available. Now, certainly we've seen that the market is valuing rentals very differently than it used to. And so I want to kind of temper even my own expectations. But, you know, Giolito, I actually think, is generally pretty good. He is certainly capable. He was worth, over 2.5 war already this year in 21 starts. You know, since returning from, you know, Tommy John surgery, what's that, 6-7 years ago, he's been extremely durable. He's made 20, not counting the COVID year, the last four full major league seasons, he's made at least 29 starts, and he's certainly on track to do that again this year. And there's just value in understanding you're probably going to get pretty good bulk out of him. He's been a bit more homer prone this year. Tough to tell how much of that is actually something different in his stuff, which I don't think so from watching him and from looking at some of the data, and how much of that is just White Sox home park is not particularly favorable. Not that that's a different ballpark than it's been the last few years, but it's a homer friendly park. I wonder if getting Giolito just out of there to a much more pitcher friendly park in Anaheim boosts his at least superficial production a little bit. Caro is the better of the two prospects. He's got a chance to be an everyday catcher, maybe a pretty good one if he hits. I think he is a lower probability guy. It's funny because there's the two we have two guys named Caro who are really good catching prospects who are not related. But the Angels have been super aggressive with their Caro. He was in AA this year. They jumped him over high A. So he was in low A last year at 19 and had a tremendous, tremendous season. So they jumped into AA, which was not a very good move. The one thing he's done is he's walked more than he struck out. He walked a ton last year. It looks like there's some real on-base skill there, but all the power just vanished. And I think it became clear, we even saw him briefly at the Futures game. It's like, oh, this guy's physically not there. He's kind of like a young 20, and the catching is a work in progress, at least. So I like the acquisition. He was a top 100 prospect coming into the season, or probably almost certainly be a top 100 prospect going into next season. He was not on my midseason top 60 because I kind of had to pump the brakes a little bit because of the over aggressive promotion. It's always tough to tease out how much of this is he's not quite as good as we thought, and how much of this is he should have been in high A to start the year. And this was just a really questionable move to promote him two levels. The other guy, Kai Bush, second round pick from a couple of years ago, big stuff, lefty who doesn't actually really get lefties out that well. He's had reverse splits so far in pro ball, but he's a big guy who has a chance for four pitches. He started this season on the injured list and hasn't been very good since his return, which again, could kind of spin it both ways. One, he's just not been good at all this year. But also if he'd been healthy this year and had a season like he had last year, then he's not the second player in a trade. He's worth probably a little bit more than that. So for the White Sox to get in and hopefully just kind of get him healthy and maybe see, you know, not worry too much about this year, see where he is next year. I think it's a fine return. It's not a blow the doors off return. And if I were a White Sox fan, I was probably sitting there hoping the Dodgers would call on Giolito. Just seemed like the perfect fit. They got a lot of prospects to trade. Maybe you were hoping for a little bit more, but this is fine.
Yeah, I mean, if you end up turning Kai Bush into a back-end starter, if he's your number four starter a couple of years from now and Carroll ends up being a starting catcher, you're pretty happy with that in the long run, but that's two conditional things. You really need both of those things to pan out to feel like you did well in this trade. Not surprisingly, we've talked about the White Sox as a franchise a handful of times. They don't have a long-term catcher, whereas the Angels, because of the trade they made last summer for Logan Ohapi, maybe felt like Carrot was more expendable. Now the White Sox potentially have that longer-term solution because Yasmani Grandal is among the other veterans that could be on the move on this roster. Now that they've started, I have to think we're going to see at least another trade or two from the White Sox, especially with the bullpen. They've got plenty of bullpen depth, a bunch of other guys going to free agency, even a guy like Joe Kelly who's under contract either with a club option for another year, or whether it's a club option or not, it's like $9 million. He's the kind of guy that other teams would want. So they have more pieces to flip without getting all the way down to some of those core guys that we've discussed as possible trade chips as well. It really depends on how extensive they want the rebuild to be in Chicago. And you get the sense that it's only going to be first layer because of their position in the AL Central. Being able to turn around a team faster in the Central divisions probably prevents them from getting down to the Cease, Eloy. I think we've described Luis Robert as a clear part of the core. Like those guys are probably fixtures because they see a quicker path to being competitive again.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. You know, their potential to get competitive at all. The system is just, the farm system is not in great shape, right? They had one guy on my top 60, the one that I just published earlier in July, just last week, in Colson Montgomery, who has been unbelievable since he came back, but he was out with a back injury and it didn't sound great. And you always worry about bigger guy at shortstop. Is this back thing going to be chronic? I have no inside information to say that. I'm just saying in general, right? Back injuries are concerning. That's the kind of thing that for a position player can certainly become a long-term issue. And after him, it's kind of a big drop off. And so there's certainly not depth in the system. And so they're in a situation where I feel like if they want to be competitive again anytime soon, it is anybody who's not a long-term part of the core should be available now. Even if you think you're getting a third tier prospect, you know, some other organization's 13th best guy, that player is more valuable to you than random reliever who, you know, maybe has a year left of control or something, or a club option. Like you said, trading as much as they can for prospect / young major league depth also. And there's nothing wrong with getting a guy who's on a major league roster and has more years of control, but guys with some upside. And then at some point, they're just going to have to go out to free agency again, which they've done a little bit of, but they're going to have to spend, because I just don't think, even if they nail it, you know, have a great run up to this year's trade deadline, they're not going to acquire the whole core of the next championship or even contending White Sox club. I think that's probably asking too much given the state of the major league roster, the state of the farm system, and you know, even considering what they did in this trade.
So there's one player on the roster that I think is kind of caught in between. Not necessarily part of the long-term core, but not a free agent yet. He's got a club option for 2024. It's Tim Anderson. And it's been just a miserable year for him. I keep wondering if it's just a health-related problem. Still looking for his first home run of the season. He's been healthy for 78 games, 340 plate appearances, putting up easily the worst slash line we've seen in his entire career, slugging under 300 so far this season. If you were in the position of the White Sox front office, you're calling shots there. Is Tim Anderson someone you say, let's just wait and see what happens? Let's give him a normal offseason, hopefully get him healthy again. And if, you know, this time next year we're still struggling, we can trade him then? Or do you actually move him now, knowing that with that club option, there might still be some teams interested in getting a short-term solution at shortstop at a relative low point in his value?
It is my answer on a lot of these sorts of questions every year. It doesn't have to be yes or no. You tell interested teams, we're willing to take offers on him. We don't have to move him. We have the potential to retain him for next year. And I mean, this doesn't have to be on Anderson, right? If he's not a rental, we don't have to move him, but we're listening. And if we get an offer that we think makes sense for us, we are willing to move him. You can always get to the trade deadline and say, we don't like any of the offers we got. So, that's what I would do in that situation because of the concern that you're just not going to get a whole lot. You're not going to get you're not going to get anywhere near the value you would have expected for Anderson even a year ago. And bearing in mind his 2022 season, which was cut almost in half, also by injury, was his worst year since 2018. Like his power was way off last year, and not that he had huge power, but he had some power. And now the power is totally gone. Like if I'm another team, I'm looking at him and thinking, God, is he just not going to be that guy again? I mean, he just peaked at 26 through 28. And then, you know, now he's just an extra guy, a utility infielder, part-time player, something like that. Like that's a pretty reasonable concern. I think given the performance we've seen from him, if you add up last year and this year, you've basically got a full season of production where he has six homers, all of which came last year, and is slugging somewhere around 350 or so in that time frame. Like that's, you're not giving up a big package of prospects to get that guy, even with the extra year of control. So I think if you're the White Sox, you say, we're taking offers. And you hope that the fact that there's probably not a ton of shortstops out there available in trade, especially Ahmed Rosario, who's had a pretty bad year actually, has already been traded. So that's one more guy off the market. Is it just now, are you the one team offering somebody who could conceivably play shortstop every day? Then maybe you get more than you think because of the scarcity, right? Just supply and demand. There will always be more teams looking for shortstops, catchers, average or better starting pitchers than there will be such players available in trade.
Yeah, you think about the other teams that are in the middle of the playoff race that are likely buying. The Marlins would be one that I think could use Tim Anderson and justify him as a pretty clear upgrade at their shortstop situation. I mean, a lot of Joey Wendell and John Birdie, and that's just, playoff teams don't usually start players like that at shortstop. They need the boost in the lineup, so I think he'd make some sense there. The Giants were one of the places. I think Eno was trying to pair up some players with new teams, and prior to the promotion of Marco Luciano, that looked like a possible fit. With Luciano up, and considering, Keith, the Giants haven't moved Luciano around defensively in the minors at all. He's just been a shortstop all the way through their system, which to me is a pretty good sign that they at least intend in the short term to break him in at the big league level at that position. So that probably takes the Giants out of the running for a player like Anderson.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
I'm curious to get your thoughts on Luciano because it was a very quick stop at AAA. He had injuries a year ago. We've talked about this younger Giants core that's made its way to the big leagues. What kind of short-term impact do you think Luciano can make for a lineup that could use a little more thump?
Yeah, I wouldn't have called him up. I don't. He wasn't very actually that good in AA. There's he struck out of 30 over 30% of the time. There's still way too much swing and miss. The swing and miss in the zone, and then he bumps up to AAA. Isn't really actually any better when you consider the environment. And he's not a shortstop. That's the biggest thing of all. I don't understand. Nobody outside of the Giants organization I've ever talked to thinks he can play shortstop. The real question is, can he even stay on the dirt? I personally would try him at third base and see what it looks like, but we don't know, right? Because he hasn't done that yet. But I know a lot of scouts. I talked to one just last week in preparing my top 60, and he said that guy's a left fielder. He's a DH. He was awful at shortstop when the scout saw him in Richmond for multiple games. And I've seen Luciano three games this year as it worked out, but he DH'd in two of them. I've seen him in the past, and he's not a shortstop. I mean, that's wishful thinking. And that's probably always been wishful thinking. We kind of always knew he was going to have trouble staying at shortstop. But then the body changed and he got heavier and he got bigger and he got, and then he started to have these injuries. It's like, just put him somewhere else and see what the bat is. The whole idea, I think when he was originally signed, it was the Giants and other clubs thought there was huge upside with the bat, and there might be huge upside with the bat, but A, it's not coming at shortstop, and B, he didn't do anything this year to make you think, oh, he's ready to come and hit major league pitching. If you're striking out that much where there's in zone swing and miss, and obviously he was taking a lot of strikes as well, where the pitching isn't easier to hit in the big leagues. So if a guy's struggling at that level to that extent in AA when also coming off of an injury, is this just a desperation move? I mean, that was my read, that they're just looking for anybody who can come in and give them a little something extra, a little thump. I mean, that's one thing he could do is if he gets a couple mistakes, he'll hit some out of the park. Wouldn't surprise me if he had a couple of decent weeks. The more he plays, the more he's going to get exposed, I think. And I would not let Luciano's presence, especially say that he has like a good weekend this weekend. Like, don't let that dissuade you from going out and getting shortstop help. But they've tried this with a bunch of guys. They've brought up a bunch of guys who were questionably ready. And I think the results have been pretty mixed. Like Casey Schmidt, wasn't really clear to me that he was ready. And he's a little older, so it's a different scenario. But he's really struggled to adjust to major league pitching. And I think that that's, Luciano might be the starkest example yet. If they give him extended playing time, I really question whether he's going to hit at all enough to help this club.
I guess the big difference for me too with Luciano is just the defensive concerns compared to Patrick Bailey, knowing that he's a great defensive catcher.
Yes.
Or Luis Matos and your needs in center field. Like, if the glove is good and you can bury those guys in the bottom third of the lineup, that's fine. If Luciano has major defensive concerns at the position you're going to play him at, and he's got swing and miss concerns, at least in the short term, maybe long term, he might be one of those guys that does a ton of damage, but strikes out 27 to 30% of the time, kind of indefinitely. That's possible. I think what you get excited about is he's so young, and with that lost time last year, we're talking about a guy who's going to turn 22 in September. He could still get a bit better. He has shown patience coming through the system, pretty good walk rates. So maybe it's just a matter of finding pitches earlier in counts that he can drive to avoid punching out. Maybe that's part of the adjustment we'll see from Marco Luciano. But yeah, the timing is just really strange because I don't think you can learn enough about a player at the big league level over the course of a series and change to significantly alter your course on the let's go get a veteran or let's not get a veteran. Part of the Giants thing, though, Keith, they move so many other guys around. It's almost like they've put themselves in the position to just go get the best available player or best available by trade return, and then they can just shuffle the pieces around and make it work to their liking. It's not necessarily a case where they have to get a shortstop. They can get a second baseman and play Tyro Estrada more at short if that's how they want to make the adjustment. Or if they want to upgrade at third, they can shift guys around the other way. So the way they built the roster gives them more deadline flexibility.
Yes, that works as long as the players are able to move around all those other positions, right? I mean, that is the Luciano problem. It's like, well, we're going to play Luciano some at short and some here and some there. And it's like, well, that's, you got to play him somewhere he can play, right? It does give them more flexibility. And, you know, I know a couple of people who think Casey Schmidt can be a perfectly capable shortstop. He's not going to be outstanding there, and the bat is its own issue. But could he stand at shortstop and just stop? You know, that's, look, we just plug that one hole and we just try to be as good as we can at all the other positions. That's an approach, certainly. Yeah, they do have some flexibility along those lines. You know, it also has occurred to me that bringing up all these prospects, I wonder if any of that is maybe not showcasing them, but yeah, letting teams see, like, what if Luciano comes up and looks okay and other teams see him and say, hey, he looks healthy. You get more video, you get full Statcast data on those guys. Maybe it helps increase their trade value just marginally. I don't think it makes a huge difference. We're not at that point. It's not like 20 years ago. But just calling up some of these guys and, you know, maybe the guys who've been up for a while, maybe moving them around a little bit, does it help make them more interesting to other clubs? Other clubs maybe get a chance to value them a little bit more highly. Sure. I think that's a reason a lot of teams move players, prospects around to multiple positions in the minors. They pay lip service till we really value flexibility and versatility. No, you're just trying to let other teams see them play other positions so that the teams that do still have pro scouts might see them there and say, oh, hey, you know, this guy's, I mean, Gunnar Henderson's a good example, drafted as a shortstop, can play shortstop. I know multiple scouts, you think that guy might be an 80 defender at third base, certainly a 70 defender. And people are saying that the upside could be Scott Rowland, who was just inducted to the Hall of Fame. That doesn't happen if you just let Henderson play shortstop all the time. So that also always comes to my mind when I see teams do, and the Giants are far from the only team that does it, do this, though, moving prospects around to multiple positions, including often to easier positions, which makes it all the weirder that they haven't done that with Luciano.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about the Giants, too, is a team that does a lot with the on-field instruction at the big league level. Tons of coaches employed by that organization. The defense of J.D. Davis is better, but it's also still, like, if you look, depending on which metrics you look at, defensive mm-hmm. run saved has him as a minus five, which puts him kind of near the bottom of qualified third baseman. Outs above average has him as a plus four. Either way, it's interesting. Better. It's better than you'd expect it to be for J.D. Yeah. Davis. The knock on J.D. Davis was, he's a DH. He's a DH. They're not going to be able to play him defensively. And he's at least passable, if not even average at third base now.
Yes, which is shocking to me as somebody who saw J.D. Davis as an amateur and thought, I always kind of thought he could hit some. I think I had him, I feel like I had him as a second round talent in that draft. But it was a huge question whether he was going to be able to stay at third. He could throw. But there was huge disagreement. There were a lot of people I talked to. It was like, first base, it's first base only. Even people who said, he's a good athlete, good enough athlete, but he's not going to be able to stay at third base. So to get passable third base play out of him is impressive.
So I think we just narrowly missed it for last week's show, but the Brewers brought up one of their outfield prospects. No, it was not Jackson Churio. It's Sal Frelick, which makes sense given their ages and where they were at in terms of level. Frelick playing this season at AAA, which is where he finished last season, AAA Nashville. Injuries actually kept Frelick from getting a chance earlier in the season. The way injuries have actually limited this Brewers team have been pretty hard to watch on a day-to-day basis, Keith. I see this team pretty much every day. And the bottom half of that lineup is a lot of quad A guys and rookies and players really who look overexposed. But Frelick could be a significant upgrade for them over the course of these final two plus months of the season. He's already making a pretty big impact. Had a first career home run on Monday. It was a game tying home run in a big game against the Reds. Had a pretty big sack fly in his debut. A couple nice catches. What kind of player is Sal Frelick likely to be? Because I think from a number scouting perspective, he looks like a throwback player. And physically, he's not big, but he's not like this little skinny guy. He's not a Nick Madrigal either. So where do you think the power is going to check in as he gets settled in against big league pitching? And just how good is Frelick going to be as part of a suddenly younger Brewers outfield?
Yeah, I'm a Frelick fan, and especially the way you described him, if that's the play, and I think he even referred to himself as a table setter, which I loved seeing, because that's a player who understands what he is too, where he's not going to be, it's funny, I think of these are prospects who many listeners may not have heard of. They're two brothers from around Philadelphia area, this area, the Siannis. Mike has, I think, had a cup of coffee with the Reds. Sammy is not progressing in the Pirates system. And they are Frelick style players who try to still try to change their swings to try to hit for more power. And it's just not the players that they are. It was very launch angly. And that's fine if you are that sort of player physically. And Frelick, to me, is the perfect example of a guy who is going to run into some home runs because he's not weak, like you said. But his real value is put the ball in play a ton, get on base because he's got a good eye and a small strike zone, run, play defense, and run into his 10 homers a year. Because, he's going to hit enough balls hard enough that he'll get his handful of homers. You know what? There might be a year where he hits 4 and there might be a year where he hits 15. Right? It's going to vary some, but it is I'm more optimistic about him than you mentioned Madrigal. I bring up Xavier Edwards, a player who I would really, really like if he just was stronger and just hit the ball hard enough. To me, that Frelick is, he's strong enough, right? He's over the line. I always think of the Far Side cartoon, you must be as tall as this sign to attack the city. Like, there's some minimum level of strength to hit major league pitching. And if you just can't hit major league pitching hard enough, guess what? Pitchers will just attack you in the zone all day long. And even if you showed good plate discipline, good patience in the minors, that might just go away because pitchers will be like, why wouldn't I just throw you strikes? Especially if I can come inside with velocity, you're not going to be able to hit it. You're not going to be able to do anything with it. Frelick isn't that guy. Frelick can do something with that. And I believe he will end up particularly a high on base guy with value as a base stealer and base runner and real value on defense. That's a really good player. And I love your description of him as a throwback player. Obviously, my formative years as a baseball fan were the 80s. I love those players. It's not that I don't want to see those players again. I just recognize the game has changed enough that the standard is different, right? You cannot be a two homer a year guy, and you're probably not a major league regular at any position, or almost any position. So Frelick to me is that he's the modern version of those players, all those Cardinals players, and the Cardinals teams that won 3 pennants in, what was it, 6 years, that where they didn't have a lot of power at all. Maybe Jack Clark, and that was it. They had a lot of guys who put the ball in play, a lot, ran extremely well, stole a bunch of bases, and played some defense. Like, Frelick is that, but you have to be built differently today. And he is, and that he really seems to understand that that's the player he is too, makes me even more optimistic about his long-term outlook.
And there's some players you can see really easily, even just watching them on TV. If they get into a two-strike situation, they shorten up. Sal Frelick's one of them. I've seen him do it a couple times already.
Nice.
Just put it in play, chop the ball on the ground, use his speed. And that to me is just like a complete old-school sort of mentality to just go to that B swing and try to make something happen. But I think there are plenty of teams in this league who have guys that do exceptional things in the power front, great barrelers, but the cost is a lot of swing and miss. The Brewers have been one of those teams in recent years where they're often in top 5 or so in team strikeout rate. They're 5th right now, 24.7%. The Twins are a team like this. If you can get a couple of table setters sprinkled in, I think that gives you a lot more as a lineup, right? You bring the team K percentage down, you have traffic, you put a little more pressure on opposing pitching staffs that way. So I think you're going to see teams increasingly trying to find players like this to mix and match with some of the more modern barrelers, as we'll call them, because you want both. Yeah. You definitely want both types of players in your lineup. Defensively, do you like him in right, center? Where would you actually want to play? I mean, they've got options because Joey Weimer looks fantastic in center. Garrett Mitchell's hurt right now. Yelich is there on a long-term deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is a team that could very reasonably move Christian Yelich to first base in the offseason if they want to, because they've got so many young outfielders and they don't really have a long-term first baseman. Many teams don't. Why not make Yelich that guy?
I think so. Frelick is a center fielder, right? In the abstract, where aren't considering the other teams, Sorry, other players on the team. He's a center fielder. He's a no doubt center fielder. Question is he plus or is he better than that? You mentioned two guys who can really play center. So can Jackson Churio. So they are, I mean, they literally cannot play. You can't play four outfielders. I'm pretty sure that's just against the rules. And if it's not, I'm sure Rob Manfred will make it against the rules very shortly. So to me, this is someone's going to get traded or someone's not going to work out. It's quite possible. Garrett Mitchell, I would say, is probably the guy I have the least confidence in of the four. I've never really liked the swing. I don't think he's got, he's not weak. I was going to say, I don't think he's got the power, but I don't know. I think it's going to be the lowest batting line of the four. That's my feeling at this point. Does that mean he's traded? I mean, they could really end up in a situation where they just play three center fielders out there and catch absolutely everything. You could even cycle the guys through the positions. You're tonight's center fielder. You play center field on alternate Thursdays, right? That's okay. Sure. They got three guys who can definitely play out there. They're going to have they could have an incredible, incredible defensive outfield. But in the absolute, you know, say if you're talking about trade value, for example, I have no indication that they were talking about trading Sal Frelick. But another club would look at him and say, that is an everyday center fielder.
Nice problem to have right now with mm-hmm. that outfield depth in Milwaukee. But I think a long-term position change for Yelich would make a lot of sense, given that they've got him under contract for a while and they've got all that young talent arriving in the big leagues. When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB show.
Let's shift the focus back to your top 60 prospect list update from last week. It was Jackson Holliday and Jackson Churio 1-2 at the top of the list. Marcelo Mayer creeping up to number 3. He's at AA right now, Keith. And I think given his age, especially, we're talking about a guy that won't be 21 years old until mm-hmm. December. It's not a surprise that he has taken a small step back with that promotion, but what is it about Mayer that you like, and is it possible that by this time next summer, he could be a part of the Red Sox lineup?
That might be aggressive. I guess I should never say never, right? Because some of these, we see young players getting to the majors awfully quickly. He's such a well-rounded player that, look, if you're going to rank that high on my list, it's because I think you have like MVP, best in the majors or best in the league at your position, top 10 player in baseball, sort of upside. You know, otherwise, it just slides you down. I may think you have really high probability, but And there's a couple of those guys sprinkled towards the top of my list, but vast majority up top, they're upside guys. And it's because with him, I see hit on base power upside from a real shortstop. Now, I think maybe it's more like 20 to 25 homers a year, not 30 plus. So maybe it's, yeah, there might be a little more swing and miss than you would expect from a guy who's, we're arguing whether he's the best player in at his position in baseball or whether he's the best player in the American League. But he could get there too. Wouldn't surprise me if he was a guy, as he continued to get more experience too, that, you know, gets double A, has a little bit of struggle, makes adjustments. By the time he is a major league regular, that we already see further improvement in that particular area. He's just, you know, he missed some time last year with a hand injury. He's not been, none of this is a long-term concern, but he's missed time. And I think he's continued to show, even with that and with injuries that could have held him back. You have a hand or wrist injury, anything like that, that can sap your power and your strength for a while. Continues to improve, continues to make adjustments. You know, those are the players I typically like to bet on, like to run up the list. Not that I think it's even remotely controversial that I have him up there, but that's why I feel very confident in having him there and saying this guy could easily be the number one prospect in baseball. If he's not in the Red Sox lineup this time next year, pretty good chance he'll be the number one prospect in baseball, because I think Jackson Holliday is coming extremely quickly. And like we were talking about with Churio, who's been on a tear lately. And again, both those guys are super young, 19-year-olds in double A, but they're also doing so well at the level. It wouldn't surprise me to see either or both of those guys in the majors this time next year.
Yeah, it does seem like a fast track for both of those players. I think you mentioned it in passing a little earlier. Amed Rosario, no longer a part of the Cleveland Guardians. They make that swap to get Noah Syndergaard from the Dodgers. It makes me wonder if the guy that you had ranked at number 8 on this update, Brian Rocchio, is actually a big winner in the final 2 months of the season as someone that could get a prolonged look.
Yeah, seriously, just call this guy up already. I mean, what exactly more does he have to do in AAA? I guess maybe if he was showing more power in AAA, but he showed power in AA a year ago. So he's demonstrated all of these skills. He can really play shortstop. He's got an exceptional eye at the plate. I do still think there's some physical development ahead of him, but, and I don't think he's a 25 homer guy either, but I think he's going to be high average. He's definitely above that line that I was talking about. He's going to hit the ball hard enough to be able to get to high average, lots of doubles, double digit homers, I would say, really get on base, play great defense at shortstop. He's also a player. I mean, I've got history with him going back to when I think he was 17 or 18. I know scouts who've covered him for, you know, multiple years in that span, and who, like, this is exactly the player they thought he was going to become. He was a guy who, if I remember correctly, missed 2020 completely because he couldn't leave Venezuela. Couldn't get a visa to come back into the United States. So he even lost more that year than most minor leaguers did, and is still obviously still the player that he is right now. I'm a huge Rocchio fan. I've always been a huge Rocchio fan. I mean, it's not that I think Cleveland doesn't recognize what they have, but they just seemed more committed to playing Rosario. And obviously Rosario's shown bits of, you know, brief periods in the past couple of years. So, okay, maybe he's, you know, he's getting to his late 20s. Maybe he's going to show a little bit more here, but that's just not happening. He's been so awful on defense this year that, you know, well, obviously that's why they didn't get a great return for him. I mean, it's also why it's like, hey, it's just time to turn the page here and let Rocchio cut. You're just a better club, I think, at this point with Rocchio playing shortstop every day than you are with Rosario playing every day, regardless of contract, trade value, et cetera. Just put the best club you possibly can out there. And oh, by the way, Rocchio is probably a core player for you going forward.
Yeah, it doesn't strike out much. His up the walk rate this year comes with the usual asterisk of the automated balls and strike system at AAA, but he's walked enough in the past where you're not looking at him as a Med Rosario clone. You're looking at him as a better version of that player, a guy that can switch hit, and somebody who's been running a lot more too. He's 19 for 22 as a base stealer this year, adding some value that way. So yeah, I don't know if there's big time power there either, but there's enough power. And if he runs as much as he's been running at AAA, then that's a boost to that Guardians run production unit, we'll call it, because they don't have a lot of power. They got to find ways to score runs in Cleveland, and that might be one of the ways to do it, just become a more active team on the base paths. One thing that really caught my eye, looking at the bigger part of this list, moving down a little bit, the Pirates, are starting to put together a lot of pitching, right? I mean, Paul Skeens at 1-1. Sure, we talked a lot about Skeens on the show in recent weeks, but Bubba Chandler cracked the top 60. Anthony Solometo was an honorable mention on the list. And if the list went to 100, I would think Jared Jones might have a case to be in the top 100, or at least to get an honorable mention on a longer list. So you have those guys, plus Mitch Keller, who's pitched well so far this year. Let's just start with Bubba Chandler. I think in your write-up, you said he's the best pitcher you've seen so far this year in terms of a live look.
Yeah, in terms of stuff, right there. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, giving him a little bit of extra points for, I mean, he is a ridiculous athlete. He was a two-sport guy in college, committed to Clemson to play quarterback, and also, by the way, a two-way player in high school who the Pirates messed around with letting him hit. I have a feeling it was one of those, yeah, okay, Bubba, you can hit for a year, but like that was cute and all, but we're done now, right? You're a pitcher. I mean, it's 94 to 98 with pretty good vertical, induced vertical on it. He's got an insane changeup for a guy. Like, they always talk about that as a feel pitch for a guy who's relatively inexperienced, relatively unpolished for a pitching prospect to have a changeup like that with great arm speed, deception, huge action on it. I mean, okay, it's high A, but the Wilmington hitters had no shot at that pitch at all. And he can spin the breaking ball. He just doesn't have much feel. He's throwing two, and he doesn't have great feel for either of those. So maybe that's one of the big things he's got to develop going forward. And he's walked too many guys this year. If you're just looking at the stat line, obviously the walk total is not where you want it to be. It's really interesting, though. It is a very specific issue with fastball command where he's trying to work in the upper part of the zone because he's going to miss bats with that pitch. And he's missing up way more than he's missing to other parts. So he's not spraying it around the zone, for example. He is still learning. I think it is a matter of just where he's finishing out front to get far enough out front that he can get the ball into the upper third of the zone, not finish so far out front that he's getting it in the heart of the zone. But he seems to be consistently erring on the side of finishing a little bit too early, and the ball sails up. And it does sail up left, center, right. So there's definitely some wildness there, but it's not out of control. It is not a guy who's just like, this guy's never going to throw strikes. He's really athletic. The delivery's fine. He's got arm speed. I think he's barely scratched the surface. There's always risk with guys like that, not the least of which is injury risk. But the upside's pretty tremendous. And I like Solometo in the draft. I actually had them flipped. I had Solometo ranked higher. I saw Solometo this year. I also saw him struggle to throw strikes. My issue with Solometo is it's a little bit more of fastball, breaking ball, and changeup's kind of a distant third, whereas Chandler's got the more complete arsenal. They're both really good. They're both really interesting. I would love to have both those guys. But I also recognize that I think Chandler's got the better chance to be a good starter because he's got the potential for even just say a three pitch mix, just pick one of the breaking balls. He doesn't need both of them, but that he's got the fastball, the breaking ball, and something for opposite side hitters makes me feel a little better about him having a good starter floor.
Yeah. And then the third guy, Jared Jones, I mean, at the very least, high leverage reliever seems possible because the fastball slider combo is so good. I think they're right to see what happens with him as a starter. If the command comes around, if the changeup comes around, he looks like a guy that could emerge to be maybe like a mid rotation guy that misses a lot of bats.
Yeah. I'm not sure I would have run him up to AAA as quickly as they did. And he's been fine in AAA, but definitely there's been a little bit of an issue there. It's really interesting too, because like you said, it's fastball slider. And this year, he's actually had a bit of a reverse platoon split, but if you dig a little deeper too, like some of the secondary numbers there and some of the pitch data, that's not really what's going on. I mean, the stuff is just going to play a lot better against right-handers, and he has a changeup. He doesn't really throw it that much. And to me, that would be the thing. And to, you know, not to tell anyone how to do their job, but that's kind of what I do. You know, I would say to Jones, all right, you're one step away from the big leagues. You want to get to the big leagues. Great. You need to show us that either you're going to throw your changeup more and really develop it, because it's not a great pitch. It's not awful, but it is not near the other two pitches. Or you're going to have to find something else. You need to show us that you've got a third pitch. I guess for him, he throws other pitches as well. But you need that pitch to show you're going to be able to get lefties out consistently and turn a lineup over multiple times. And you're not coming to the big leagues until you do that, because we don't want to just consign you to a relief role. He's super athletic. He's still not pitched right. He was a 2020 draftee, so that's a lost year for him as well. God, I remember seeing him, I'm pretty sure, as an underclassman at NHSI. And God, the arm speed alone made you interested. The arm speed and the athleticism, like, you are automatically interested. But he's still got a ways to go, I think, to get to be a major league starter. And I am not a fan of bringing a guy in that situation up to the major leagues. Let him work this out in AAA. Let him get hit around in AAA. It's okay. I'd rather see that happen than have that guy come to the big leagues and get hit around there. And then you worry about, okay, is this going to change how he pitches? Is this going to change his mindset and delay his development further?
Yeah, but a lot to like in Pittsburgh, even though the Pirates have sunk to the bottom of the NL Central. That pitching is on the way. Still some really interesting position player prospects that are a little further away too, that can join the guys that have already been promoted this year. Some players we've discussed on this show in recent weeks. An open question for you before we go, Keith. I was starting to think about the teams that are clearly not going to the playoffs in 2023. Maybe it was because of the White Sox trade, but look at the Tigers, the White Sox, the Royals, the A's, the Nats, the Cardinals, the Pirates, the Rockies. It's weird to have the Cardinals in that group. Those eight teams, I think, all have single-digit playoff odds as we record this podcast. And of those teams, let's say two, if you had to pick two that you think had the best chance of finding the postseason in 2024, which two teams would you pick? I made it two because I feel like the Cardinals are always kind of a default, right? It's just it's so hard to bet on them.
That was the team I was going to say, right? Is that – I almost feel like it's cheating.
But that's why I made it two, because it's okay. You could say the Cardinals, because I think that was the one that I'm looking at. I'm like, I think they're still the most – they're more dangerous than those other teams. But you know, which one of these other ones could get ahead of their rebuild faster than expected? I think that's more or less the question.
I'm looking. Okay, I don't have a high degree of confidence in any of these teams. I just pulled up the standings, too, just to see, like, you know, just to remind myself, right? The Royals and the A's are on pace to lose 150 games or something. So, but yeah, I really like where the Tigers are going. I know the farm system is still not in great shape, but, right, Riley Green is breaking out big time. If he hadn't missed all that time with the broken leg bone, I think we'd be talking about everyone. We'd be talking about him a lot more. That kid's a star. I love the progress he's making. Matt Vierling's having a nice season. I think he's showing himself to be at least a major league regular. Spencer Torkelson's probably always going to feel like a disappointment for 1-1, but he's just going to be a regular, I think. And they found some nice other bats. Like Cary Carpenter looks like a pretty good little player, actually. And by next year, right, Tarik Skubal was his start the other day. I talked to a scout who happened to be there. He's like, that was nasty. Like, you got to see, he made good major league hitters look like children at the plate. And you know what? Maybe next year they get Casey Mize back healthy at some point. Like, that's heading the right direction. You can always hope Matt Manning gets healthy and effective. And they've got a couple players they can trade right now. Like, they got to trade some of these really, you know, Alex Lang, Eduardo Rodriguez. I mean, Alex Fajedo, they've started him. He's a good reliever for somebody, I think. And I feel good about this front office doing that and doing a little bit better right after the trade where they sent Gregory Soto to the Phillies. Vierling was part of the return for that. All right, they're targeting a different type of player now. That makes me feel better about them doing the right things. Also, I'm cheating a little bit because that division is going to be easier to contend in next year than, say, the AL East, where literally the Yankees are in last place and they're 6 games over .500.
I think it's a totally valid target for second team of that group.
Yeah. By the way, who's your second team?
It's risky because if they were to tear it down more than we expect them to, the same amount of thinking. I think I'm a sucker for the White Sox. I don't know why. I can't defend myself, but I think between Luis Robert, I think when you look at the Andrew Vaughn's still going to be there. I think Andrew Vaughn can still get a lot better. What's the difference between Andrew Vaughn and Spencer Torkelson in terms of their long-term outlooks as offensive players? Do you believe that Torkelson's power is more established? Is that the difference between the two?
He's definitely got more raw, but Vaughn's also shown less than I've expected. Like, I don't think I ever thought Vaughn was a 30 homer hitter. I thought he was a high average, high on base guy, maybe 20 homers. And actually the biggest thing, I just pulled up Vaughn's stats just to make sure, like, he's not been very patient. He's not been this guy walked a ton in college, and it was not fake walks where he's, you know, playing horrible competition, or he's in the Pac-12 and he was walking against good pitching too. He was, you know, he showed exceptional strike zone judgment, and that has not carried over. Whereas with Torkelson, Torkelson was more power. I never loved Torkelson's hit slash plate discipline package, but the power was so good, and all that guy ever did do was hit. It's like, you know what? Maybe I'm just wrong, right? Maybe I'm still just wrong, and Torkelson's going to come out next year and hit 30 bombs and be the best player on the Tigers. Like, I don't want to just deny that possibility. I'm more shocked by Vaughn, because I thought, if nothing else, that guy's going to put the ball in play a ton and get on base. And it's not like he's hitting for no power. It's not that problem we were talking about earlier, where the guy who has no power at all stops walking because pitchers are like, why would I bother? Right? It's not that. But he's just never shown that approach. And I don't know if it's because the White Sox just brought him to the majors so quickly. It seems like that excuse wears off after a while. He's in year three. We should be seeing improvement. I thought he'd take a big step forward this year, and he hasn't. And actually, his stat line is pretty much all down slightly from last year, which is obviously the wrong direction for a 25-year-old.
So I think part of it for me is the never-ending belief that Eloy Jimenez is going to have a season where he stays healthy for 150 games and hits 40 home runs with a good average, good OBP. I think he's that kind of player on a per-game basis, but it's just been injury after injury after injury. I think when you take Robert, Jimenez, Vaughn, if Anderson's still there, I think an Anderson bounce back with health is very reasonable. You get a few other guys like Colas who could get better. Maybe Jake Berger gets a little better. I assume they're going to spend some money in free agency because they're not doing the big rebuild. This is where the belief comes from. Dylan Cease can be a near frontline guy. Kopech, when he's good, is good. So it's enough of a core in that division where I still think if they're not doing the full teardown, they could actually make a run and try and contend in the AL Central, or maybe be a wild card team in 2024, as disappointing as this is. It's sort of like doubling down on the Angels after last season. That's where I was with the Angels. I'm like, come on, they have to be a playoff team in 2023. And they're still sitting at like 16% playoff odds as the weekend approaches. So it takes me a long time to learn my lesson in some of these cases. So I'm stubborn. I'm sticking with the White Sox. I'll probably look like an idiot again this time next year. Keep the receipts on this one. I think they can actually put it back together reasonably quickly. I don't know if they're going to make changes in that front office. It seems like Jerry Reinsdorf seems like one of the most loyal owners in baseball to his front offices. So maybe they're running it back with everybody still in place.
Yeah, I'm a little bit with you in that we all thought the White Sox were going to have a bigger run of contention, right? I think three, four years ago, it's like, all right, they got it. They've put this group together. Hiring Tony La Russa was a colossal mistake, and I think really cost them quite a bit. You know, I think there have been some mistakes on the baseball side, and also some guys have just not gotten better like we thought they were going to get better. And all of that combined to, I wonder if a little bit of this is the residue of, we all thought they were going to be better, right? Are they going to stay that bad? Are they going to stay bad like this forever? I mean, I'm glad to see them open the trading season. Is the first significant trade, right? This is a big one. It's the first one I'm writing up, at least. And you know, that says to me, oh no, they see it. They know they're not deluding themselves. We got to trade these guys. We got to get in any kind of prospect depth we can. Yeah. Like I said, at the top of the show, Caron Bush is not a blow the doors down. You're not jumping for joy, but it's good. You got two prospects who are almost certainly in the White Sox top 10. I mean, Caro clearly is the second best prospect in the system right now, I think. It's good. It takes them in the right direction. Trades like this do not necessarily help them for next year, but hopefully they set them up so that they are not a 110 loss team from multiple seasons. And this could easily have gone that way if Reinsdorf had said, nope, you're not trading anybody.
Yeah, that would be the nightmare scenario for the White Sox based on how this has gone. I guess the other part of it, too, the belief would be Colson Montgomery. Maybe he's a faster moving player than some would have expected. The lost time certainly hurts that just a little bit, yeah. Right? We're talking about a guy who's played in 24 games now this season.
Yeah, he's really good, though. I mean, I know you're not disputing that, but if he's healthy, I mean, God, he could be in the majors in September. They may not want to for 40-man roster reasons or for service time reasons. I would understand that. I would not argue if they said, we're not calling him up because he doesn't need to go on the 40 yet. Fine. He's really good, though. And it's just, I mean, if he were healthy all season, he would have been in my top 10, maybe even in my top 5. I'd have to think about that a bit more. But like, that guy's really good. It's just the injury, the lost time, and would really like to see him stay healthy for a longer period. That's it. But like, he's coming fast. He's the one where you could see him helping the club in 2024. And if you think he's a shortstop, I'm in the minority. I actually kind of want to leave him at shortstop a little bit longer, let him play his way off of it. But maybe they say, we're going to give him a year at shortstop, and that maybe gives them a little more incentive to trade Tim Anderson. I'm okay with that.
All right. One more reason to get on the bandwagon with me for the White Sox in 2024 could be a Colson Montgomery debut year. Based on the talent that he brings to the table. We are going to sign off. If you'd like to keep up on all the happenings for the trade deadline, get a subscription to The Athletic. $2 a month gets you in the door at theathletic.com/baseballshow. On Twitter, you can find Keith at Keith Law. You can find me at Derek Van Riper. But that's going to do it for this episode of The Athletic Baseball Show. Have a great weekend.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.